Mound of podcast sound, pound for pound, the best podcasts around.
So let's drop it like it's hot right into the program.
Thank you guys for that rousing introduction. I'd like to welcome you, and especially you to the program today. Right now, first up on the podcast gate, we're going to talk about a little internet dating, and I've heard of a few of them. I actually started one for a guy who didn't have the internet, and I just turned to be a pain in the ass, and he wanted me to put stuff in there and get responses from it, and it never worked out. But I've had another guy on these were both eHarmony clients that did it, but friends of mine, and the other one did it on his own. And he didn't have much luck with it either because they give so little time. There's only a short dating window or something like that where they move on to the next person. But I've heard of I've never been on Tinder or Bumble, or I think I might have checked out OkCupid, but I don't know how many people around from this area. The dating pool is not very large around in southwest Minnesota, I must say. It says here that paying for a dating app usually isn't worth it. If you want better matches and more dates on Tinder, Bumble, or other apps, focus on your profile instead of upgrading to a paid version. Let's let the trains pass here. I mean, every fucking 5 minutes they gotta blow their fucking horns. All day and all night. I swear to God, it's every 5 minutes. Okay, well, I'm over that rant, I guess, a little bit. I'm sure they'll start up again here soon. If you've been using dating apps for more than a minute, you've probably noticed that most free services advertise paid upgrades that promise to transform the experience, ranging from $10 to $35 a month. The upgrades offer everything from showing your profile to hotter users to telling you when or if someone read your message. Well, shouldn't they let all hotties be available for... That's kind of sexist to just have like average-looking people at the bottom of the dating slot as far as for the free users. Most daters aren't paying to meet people. Less than 3% of the millions of online in the U.S. pay, according to financial data collected by a loan company, Earnest. That hasn't stopped the services from heavily marketing the advantages of upgrades, as they can significantly pad their bottom line. On Bumble, for example, you get asked to upgrade after swiping on just a few dozen profiles, regardless of how often you decline the offer. Yeah, that would get totally annoying. To find out if upgrading is worth it, I talked to dating app makers about what their data shows and asked daters to share their personal upgrade experiences. What I learned is that while some lucky users get more dates by paying, most likely because more people swipe right on them in the first place, more often paying for matches just isn't worth it. How an upgrade can help, though, for some people, there are real benefits to upgrading. Men who pay on coffee meets bagel, for example, have a 43% higher number of connections, mutual likes, than non-payers. Coffee meets bagel. I've never heard of that one. Said the dating's co-founder, Dawoon Kang. She adds that the conversation length increases by 12% if you upgrade to the paid version for $35 a month. Yeah, it's probably like nobody gets a second date if you're not a paid-up person on these dating sites, let alone marriage. I heard at one time that Match.com was the one that had the most that ended up in the marriage. But maybe, I suppose, eHarmony is the second largest advertiser. I suppose they're probably ranked really high. You know, they have 29 dimensions of compatibility. That's my thing. I don't want to spend like 5 hours writing a profile, but I suppose you have to do it. Christy Colorado, a transportation planner in New York, says paying to upgrade her dating app has been worth it. The 27-year-old first started using free Tinder after a breakup in college and upgraded to paid in 2016. I started meeting people so much quicker compared to when I wasn't paying for it, she said. She estimates that she gets about 5 matches per day with Tinder Gold, which costs $15 a month, and has had numerous dates and a handful of relationships as a result. Well, doesn't say long-term relationship or anything there. But people have called me desperate for paying to use a service that could be free, she said. But when I did the free version of Tinder, I usually got 1 or 2 matches a day, because it took so much longer to swipe through and wait for the guys to swipe back. I haven't looked at Tinder, but maybe I will after this program. When paying to upgrade, your free app just isn't worth it. Not everyone opts for the paid version is satisfied with the results. Danny Sato, there we go again. 29-year-old tech support expert from Houston says he's spent around $250 on Plenty of Fish. I have heard of that one. OkCupid and Tinder in the last decade. Most of the time, that's quite a sum of money to spend on dating apps. Soto claims he's used the apps to seek relationships, but has settled for hookups during times that he wasn't ready for anything long term. He stopped paying for the upgrades just a few months ago, however, because he's not looking for anything serious. That's kind of what I've heard, that most of these things are just like hookup sites. And if you're looking for something serious, you go to eHarmony or Match. But that's just what I've heard. But paid sites and services can make things easier because you can see who already liked you. But all that is useless if you just come across as uninteresting to the other person. Yeah, you got to make a good profile. Sometimes upgrading to the paid version doesn't help your dating game at all. I only decided to upgrade this past month for a chance to meet guys when I go back home to Texas for a while, said Liam Evans, a 21-year-old photography student. She said she. Liam? I know it's Liam Neeson, but she's using Tinder Plus. However, the amount of dates hasn't really gone up since upgrading. Oh, no. So I guess it is. Okay, there we go. I guess it was somebody else. So this guy doesn't plan on renewing his subscription when it expires in early July. My logic behind upgrading was that it would allow me to meet people in a different country while only costing me the price of a pizza. But so far, it hasn't changed much in ways of my dating life, and my experience on the app hasn't changed much either. If you are upgrading to get more dates, and other strategies may be more effective. Start with your profile photo. A picture is worth 1,000 words. Yeah, it is, definitely. Said Alex Williamson, Chief Brand Officer at Bumble. Your first photo should be your favorite photo of yourself, and it should be current. Yeah, don't use one that's 20 years old. More is better. We find that people who take the time to upload, well, maybe after the third date. Ha, ha, ha. to upload 6 photos, have a better experience on our platform, because you're really telling the story of who you are, Williamson added. Some goes for the written profile, according to Coffee Meets Bagel, with longer profiles who spend more time chatting with potential dates are more likely to meet someone. And why don't they just have a free singles chat thing, not bomb you with ads and stuff like that. But not sure what to add, take a few minutes to list some of your interests and give potential matches an idea of what you care about or how you spend your free time. A clever bio is one of the best ways to strike up a conversation, suggested Williamson, which can lead to a date down the line. Getting past saying just hi and making a move that is engaging, shows off your personality, or invites banter, always leads to a successful connection. If you get past the word hi, that's always a good sign, I guess. If you are not having any luck with one free swipe site, switch to another. Post profiles on various sites, as you may find one works better for you than another. At the end of the day, putting your best foot forward online is free of charge. It doesn't cost anything to share yourself properly. The key to success is engagement on your part. One thing I wouldn't do is do the Craigslist thing. I've heard some real horror stories on that. I guess on Bumble, Boost is up to $25 a month to see who's already liked your profile, rematch with your expired connection, and extend matches an extra 24 hours. On Coffee Meets Bagel Premium, that's up to $35 a month for exclusive access to user activity reports. You also get Beans, which you can use to contact other members. OkCupid A-List, up to $10 a month for ad-free swiping, the ability to see who has already liked you, search filters for body type and attractiveness, and read receipts with conversations. OkCupid Premium A-List, up to $25 a month for 1 free automatic boost per day during prime time, which shows your profile to more users. The chance to see and be seen by more attractive matches, plus all the A-List features. And if you're a Plenty of Fish member, it's up to $10 a month to see who wants to meet you, if messages were read and deleted, and who looked at your profile, among other perks. The site claims upgrading will triple the number of profile views. Tinder Plus. That can cost you up to $20 a month to swipe right on an unlimited number of profiles. Rewind on the last swipe, 5 super likes per day, 1 boost each month to be one of the top profiles in your area, and a passport feature which allows you to change your location and swipe around the world. Tinder Gold, up to $30 a month to see who has already liked you, plus all the features in Tinder Plus. So it sounds like Tinder Gold is the most expensive one. If you can't see who likes you on the free ones, it's like, what's the point of doing the free? I don't know. I'll have to look at some of those. Maybe report back on another podcast. But that was the end of that. Are you a member of any of these? I'd like to hear from you at randyms12@gmail.com and tell me which ones are good, as I might do one. So it's the end of that story, so we will move on to another topic. But before I leave the topic of dating sites, why don't they just put in a dating site just called Fuck Buddy? That's pretty much what these sites seem like. It's like no one dreams of building a foundation with somebody, becoming friends first, and then moving on, and it becomes a relationship, and you get close, and maybe end up in marriage. I guess nobody wants that anymore. It's just wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, that type of thing. I still have hope that some people still want to be friends first, but you just never know.
Hurry up. Let's move on with the show, you bloody wanker.
Bloody hell. Can I get any respect from you announcers? Well, next up, we do have a story about a man who takes his vaping seriously. His electronic cigarette. He does it on an L.A. freeway sign before backflipping to the ground. Wearing only his boxers, the guy brought traffic to a two-hour standstill during rush hour. You know, there's a picture of the guy kind of doing a muscle man. Not a muscle man. I don't know. His one arm's up in the air and the other arm's back like he's doing a karate pose or some shit. And I see his... It looks more like boxer briefs, but he should have. You're gonna climb up on a damn traffic sign. Why don't you wear something like SpongeBob underpants, boxers, or something like that? Something creative. And the story goes: the American Highway, a place where one can cruise with the windows down, crank up the tunes, and see things like naked men on ATVs, cats surfing on minivans, and even a person cling to life on the hood of a car while talking on their cell phone. And Wednesday in L.A. was no exception when a guy in nothing but his underwear climbed to the top of a freeway exit sign, causing a massive traffic jam until authorities managed to coax him to the ground. According to the Los Angeles Times, the man somehow managed to scale the exit sign on Route 101 at around 8 a.m., leading authorities to halt the cars heading into downtown L.A. during rush hour. After unfurling a few painted banners, one that featured the name Dupree, and others that called for the need to fight pollution, witnesses say the dude started rapping and screaming about God through the bullhorn. When he wasn't shouting or dancing, he reportedly took breaks to vape. At around 10 a.m., cops finally managed to get him down from the freeway, placing a massive inflatable cushion beneath the overpass. It was then that the man deployed one final trick. He backflipped into the mattress before authorities on the ground took him away. While the identity of the man has not been confirmed, reporters for the LA Times have speculated on Twitter that he might be a rapper by the name of Dupree, who's made a few music videos wearing the same boxer brief uniforms around LA. It's not clear if the stunt was meant as an act of protest or just a publicity stunt to drum up views online. Whatever the motive, the man was successful at one thing, bringing LA traffic to a two-hour standstill and ostensibly making some commuters very late for work. Between people scaling highway signs and subway terminals, literally crumbling to the ground, it's no wonder people are looking for alternative modes of transportation. Yeah, it's time to get the flying car off the ground. Somebody, I know it's being offered by one company, but the one that they show in the video that's being offered for sale looks like it's just like one person and you don't carry anything but yourself in it, Once I get one with some drink holders and some storage and stuff like that, maybe, and make it affordable for regular people and not too difficult to get a pilot's license and whatever, I would take to the skies.
The next story may be offensive to some listeners, so I will give you time to tune away.
Okay, now that we've given those people easily offended time to tune away, it's time to talk about the next item up for bids on the Podcast is Right. It's about one woman's quest to become a Harry Potter erotic fan fiction writer. And I will try to tone it down a little bit, some of the story, but It is pretty funny. 7 days and 12,000 words later, I understand why a children's book universe is such a potent vehicle for smut. Harry used his hand to slowly maneuver Draco's wand off while his tongue worked quick circles around the tip of Draco's wand.
Ew!
If this quote fills you with confusion, dread, discomfort, then you're probably like I was a few months ago, blissfully unaware that there's a world out there filled with wands, polyjuice, potions, and eclectic variety of words for a penis and an uncomfortable obsession with the term folds. Yes, it is Harry Potter erotic fan fiction, and it's 100% a thing. Fan fiction has basically existed as long as the internet. There are hundreds of websites out there dedicated to all sorts of fan fiction. But the number one favorite on all of these sites is apparently Harry Potter erotica. That's wizards having sex, FYI. And I'm desperate to find out why that is. I read about a dozen stories before I realized that this was something I wanted to tap into myself. Was I aroused? No. Impressed? Maybe. All I knew was that I wanted to learn more about the process. So I set off on a little quest to become a Harry Potter erotic fan fiction sensation, because why would I not want to spend a week of my life writing about wizards banging? In order to begin, I had to come up with a pen name. And as if by magic, the Golden Snatch became mine. But as I attempted to type out a few sentences, my initial thoughts of how hard can it be to write about Hagrid getting a blowjob rapidly dissipated into a deep-set revulsion and fear that soon I would have to describe Harry Potter's wand, and in a non-iconic, ironic way. Suddenly I was drowning in HP sex puns like expellianus and expecto patrocum. And maybe I was losing my mind. None of this was very sexy. I absolutely needed some help. Well, you need a plot there too, along with those kind of words. So I sent an SOS email to three people that are more well-versed in Harry Potter's erogenous zones, the creators of the Potterotica podcast. I asked my new Potterotica friends, Allie, Lindsay, and Danny, what readers will expect in my stories aside from the magical muffs and wizardry wangs of the pre-existing Harry Potter characters we've all grown up with. And I have been advised by Danny that the golden sex ratio for fiction is more sex the better. So this was something I had to think about. women like squirt pop, Allie told me. Interesting, I guess if people can fly on broomsticks in this world, then all women can be graced with that little bit of magic too. Everyone loves the sex scenes between Harry and Draco, because their sexual tension is so high in the books. Well, I would put Harry, Ron, and Hermione in one, but one avid reader named Mackenzie told me Harry and Draco, coined Drerry by their readership, are apparently one spicy, spicy dish. Well, he was his mortal enemy in the series, only becoming sort of a okay dude at the very, very end. But seeing as they are the most shipped couple, I can't really get away with not including Drerry Loving in my story. Who else? I asked her. Sirius and Hermione is a big one. Huh. Sirius Snape. And I wish I could do his impression now. I can't think of his name, but he did that voice so well. Ron and Pansy Parkinson. Hermione and Snape. Where your loyalties lie. Alan Rickman, there we go. I did get that. That's May he rest in peace. That one shocks me a little bit. Hermione and Professor Snape. Well, that'd be an interesting story, I think. The last one, I'm not sure if I'm down for the whole teacher-student vibe. That's not sexy. That's just very, very illegal. Mackenzie assures me it's not really her thing either. A seedier part of the fan fiction world is that it allows people to explore that mainstream audiences would normally consider to be a little taboo, or a lot taboo. So the amount of violent, incestuous, non-consensual stories out there is high. Let's see how, here's some description of what's been written. To his delight, the smile returned, just a flash of brilliant teeth, but it was enough, I approve. And then Malfoy flung his hands back over his head, sprawling as though he'd just fallen. His voice ratcheted into a falsetto range. Oh, Harry Potter, take me like the slayer of darkness and the defender of righteousness that you are. And also there's never enough foreplay. Lindsay said, apparently the women are always dripping right away. Sexy, sure. Realistic, no. Clearly people were calling out for more realistic sex scenes amidst the smut. Yeah, you gotta preheat the oven before you stick in the turkey, you know. Maybe my role would be to write some tired from work, keep your tops on kind of sex, or some long sessions of heavy petting to liven up this Harry Potter erotic world with some realism. Get some foreplay in there, girl, advised Allie. Not a problem. The more time I can spend avoiding actual penetration in this story, the better. Already I felt like I've tapped into a real nice community of fans sharing horny Harry Potter fics, berating each other for being Hufflepuff, and generally having a good time. We even spent some time workshopping polyjuice sperm puns. That's polyjuice, if you're wondering. Yes, people enjoy their smut, but really they just love Harry Potter and everything that comes from it. Lindsay called the Potter Erotica Facebook page a safe space where an open and honest dialogue around sex and consent is not only encouraged, but imperative. The subculture is becoming a platform for better representation, too, with heaps of fan fiction set out to rectify the original books. Heteronormative blunderings by actual, including LGBTQ, RSMSSD, characters I never knew, Harry Potter porn could be the catalyst for conversations around sexuality, mental health, and good consensual sex. But apparently it is. Next, the podcast put me in touch with another listener ready to talk me through exactly what readers want when they choose to read fan fiction. Alyssa confessed to me she probably started reading erotic fiction a little younger than appropriate, as she went searching for the smutty stuff around age 15. I love the getting together, she told me, aka the moment when Hermione finally gives Ron a good old BJ, which weirdly is not included by J.K. Rowling in the original 7 books. I thought it was going to be Snape there, but that was frowned upon, I guess. Alyssa advised me to be delicate with my word choice. If you're describing a wand, you wouldn't call it a wand, she said, adding that you don't need to describe it as huge and long and hard and red. Well, actually, they were kind of brown, I thought. Oh, boy. She says she's too gay for this. Yeah, they're all red in fan fiction. I don't know why. Now I've read enough smut in my time to know that wands are normally throbbing, and vaginas are usually weird, mewling, delicate flowers. So I think once you get past the mulva, I get what she's talking about. But for me, this It is so unsexy I could cry. I make a mental note to Google some decent words for a vagina that don't make me turn into the awkward face emoji. Fold is something that comes up a lot. Vajayjay. Mackenzie told me a lady's fold may be the most unpleasant thing I've heard today. It's got to go into the story. What a vague idea of a storyline and some pretty horrendous buzzwords. Picked out Joy Box, anyone? That works. I reached out to an actual writer of Harry Potter. Let me do that again. Harry Potter fiction. So that maybe she could hold my hand and explain to me gently how I could possibly start to knit these words together and write actual smutty sentences. Chelsea had very recently started writing fan fiction for herself after being an avid reader for some time. It's actually like a natural impulse to want to put those characters in more adult situations and expand them. She told me of her first foray into writing. Oh my, this story goes on and on. It seemed to come up again. The writing of Smut was simply due to the fact that these people love characters and wanted to see more from them. In some cases, a lot more. Fan fiction for them was a natural progression from loving the Harry Potter books as children to loving them in their own way as adults. Of course, I get that Harry Potter is fantastic, but I'm still struggling with the concept of having to strip down my favorite characters and have them rub the uglies up on each other. But this is where Chelsea came in. Apparently, it's not all explicit content in the fan fiction world, and there are varying degrees from explicit to mature to teen. So if you're struggling to write the naughtiest bits, you can merely suggest them in a more PG-13 kind of way. Think Chaste. Hand-holding between Luna Lovegood and Neville Longbottom, and maybe a little boob grab, but for me, this seemed like a bit of a cop-out. I was here for smut, so I would write smut. If you're jumping into this world, you may as well dive into the deep end, Chelsea added. She was right. It was time to dive in head first. There was something really easy and natural about writing about Harry Potter characters who I'd grown up with, albeit less naked, and I couldn't help but find myself geeking out a bit. My Harry Potter knowledge was extensive and thoroughly honed on the Harry Potter section of Quiz Up, and writing this fiction felt like a fun way to test that. I started putting twists and turns into the story and thinking things like classic Ginny Weasley or that so Draco Malfoy, and I really hadn't expected that to happen at all. I knew I had to write 3 sex scenes for my fiction, and they were looming over me like something pulsing and throbbing in red. My first attempt at writing a sexy line went something like this. Ginny reached out her hand and touched Cho's, but then I couldn't continue. I couldn't say it. I thought maybe at this point, you know what, it would be an appropriate term for a vagina. It seemed in keeping with the theme of the books, but fear of a name just increases fear of the thing itself. We've heard it before. If Harry Potter can say Voldemort, I can say folds. Folds, oh God, touched her glistening folds. It's undoubtedly the worst thing I've ever had to type in my life, but after I typed it once, things got a little easier. I couldn't help but feel a little proud. First folds, and then things were glistening and pulsing, and I was up, up, and away. I spent about an hour writing the scene where Ginny Weasley and Cho Chang, oops, spoilers, first having sex in my story. Once I ripped the whole folds band-aid off, I was starting to maybe enjoy myself. Was I aroused? This woman says, she goes, maybe. I was basically getting to think about sex and writing it down, and it wasn't that horrible. I think maybe I blocked out because an hour later I had 3,000 words of an unadulterated, uninhibited, uncringeworthy lesbian witch sex. I don't fully remember writing it. Cho and Ginny having a great time, though. Don't worry. I set out to finish my 12,000 words of sexy, sexy stuff, plus intensive narrative action over the next few days. And as the days went on, what started off as a chore became something actually I started to look forward to. I found it frustrating to tell people what I was up to that week. Apparently writing Harry Potter porn is not a regular response to what you've been up to. And I was getting tired of having to explain myself. Now, what's wrong with writing smut? I found myself leaving social events early so I could go home to tend to the summit, while finding any excuse to read bits out to my friends. I even texted my gay friend Kyle to try and workshop a Draco and Harry sex scene at 9 a.m. on a Wednesday. He politely declined. Suit yourself, Kyle. It took me 4 days to write my story, and then I sent off for feedback from a writer who diligently edited the filthy thing. Rachel helped me affix words like throbbing and rippling to sentences to make them a little sexier, and even sent me to a website that had a comprehensive list of reportedly sexy descriptive words for erotic writers to use. Unfortunately, I read the phrase meat wand and immediately had to close the page. And then she goes on to say, just call it a cock. Rachel replied, I called her squirming. That was refreshing to hear. Cock-a-doodle-doo was practically music to my ears in comparison to the fleshy pink meat wands. And I've been burned into my memory forever. Well, I think that story goes on and on and on. I don't know if it, how would you like to read some of those stories? Who would Dumbledore be paired off with? And I suppose he's got a magic pill that's 100 times better than the little blue pill we have today. You think Dumbledore and Snape might be an unusual couple? Funny story, though. That was her goal, and she started writing it. I don't know. And what was that one woman's name? Professor. I can't think of it, but she was the older one and was always kind of defending Harry. We'll see if that becomes a big. They already said it is the biggest thing of fan fiction is Harry Potter. So we will leave Hogwarts to their proclivities.
Now it is time to call Black Alert and Spore Drive this episode to the interwebs.
I would like to thank you, and especially you, for listening to this episode of Infotainment. If you like it, tell your friends, and you can tweet my Twitters at Randy Podcaster. Check out my Infotainment Facebook page. Email me at randyms12@gmail.com. This program can be found at Podbean, Podomatic, Apple Podcasts, Blueberry, and infotainmentpodcast.com. I'd like to thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye, folks.